Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, forest bathing. I mean, you've heard of bathing in the sea, you've heard of bathing in the ocean, but have you heard of bathing in the forest? Come on, we'll tell you about it.
Okay.
And being single and obesity, which is a greater risk factor for essentially kind of living longer? It's kind of an interesting study out of Brigham Young University.
I'm guessing that bottom line, but I'm looking forward to the topic.
Absolutely, and I bet you're looking forward to our wonderful recipe. Squash curry with red lentils. Let me tell you, it doesn't have seafood, it doesn't have beef, it doesn't have chicken, but it's really, really good. And we might even get Tom to eat it. It doesn't have tofu, so there's a possibility that non-tofu Tom will like squash curry with red lentils. But really, it's a high-protein vegetarian dish.
Moving right along. 800-462-7413, our number. Our first caller joins us now, Zorba, a listener in Edmond, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, how can we help?
I have a question about cardiac rehab. I am currently in a program for cardiac rehab, and the program is very thorough. One of the questions that I have is the fat restriction that they are requiring. I had thought that most of the recent research suggested you should have a certain amount of quality fat in your diet to be healthy, and it is very restricted, and I am just wondering if I should be questioning that.
Yes, you definitely should be questioning that. Now, you know, there's good fat and bad fat. I mean, so first of all, let's start with our whole history. The history was the meat and potatoes diet. I wish I still had it. I looked at nutrition from the 1960s, What's Good Nutrition, and it was a book that showed meat and potatoes and bacon, and it didn't show lard, but basically it was too much fat. And then we discovered in the 1970s that high-fat diets were not good for us, and that's because it was the type of high-fat diet. So what we did over time was realize there's good fat and bad fat. So a good example is salmon is a fatty fish. It absorbs lots of flavors. It has good fat. It's actually good for us. Avocado is a vegetable that is a high-fat vegetable. It's not a low-fat vegetable. It's good fat. Olive oil is good fat, so olives are good for us. Our regular olives may have a little too much salt, but olive oil and olives are actually good for us. And bad fat is eating lots of beef fat. I mean, beef fat is not good for us. So this is a very restrictive diet that they want you on, or they put you on?
I give them a report on regular. They have classes, nutritional classes. And
then they shame you if you eat too much fat. Do they publicly shame you? They put you in front of the class and they said, this guy is eating too much fat, and take their fingers and rub them and go, shame, shame, shame.
They suggest that they want 20% of the calories coming from fat. Mm-hmm. That sounds reasonable, but along with that, as they suggest, that any fat should be restricted, including avocados, olive oil, and things that I've always considered to
and
be
nuts.
Good fat.
And nuts.
Yes.
Well, they're wrong. They're wrong. It's plain and simple. They are not correct. They are back in the 80s or 90s. That's what they are. They're back in the 80s or 90s. And this, by the way, is not unusual. Cardiologists on the whole, I don't want to damn all of them, but many of the cardiologists and the nutritionists associated with cardiology believe the cardboard diet is the best diet to have. And it's a puritanical concept that should be thrown out, absolutely the case, because we've discovered that there are actually good fats. And so they're behind the times. Now, if you just tell them they're behind the times, they will not be happy. happy campers. But the reality is you should not follow all of their advice. And there is good fat around. And the other issue is that there are more and more studies that show that fat is satisfying to us from a point of view of eating calories. You know, the non-caloric food snack well cookies that were really big 20 and 30 years ago turned out to be filled with carbohydrates. They had a high glycemic index, bad for the pancreas, more likely to get diabetes. They were a perfect example of a poorly designed cookie. You know, a cookie, for example, that has some fat in it that you like, and you mate one cookie eating four of the other cookies. So there's the satisfaction of fat that also comes with it. So I think 20, 25% is really very reasonable, and you want to have good fats, like you said, avocado and others. So, you know.
Well, are they
going to kick you out of the program if you don't eat the right fat?
And I'm not
facetious about this. I'm actually serious about it.
No, I think they will continue to put up with me. I told them from the beginning that I might cheat a little bit.
You know, but it's not cheating. It's an interesting word that we say when we say that. We say we're going to cheat. It's kind of an interesting thing, as if we should be, you know, on the straight and narrow, when in fact nobody goes the speed limit in the country except for the obsessive compulsive. So we all cheat on the road. I mean, it's a very interesting word that we should be on the straight and narrow. I want to give a side thing. A few years ago, I was on a Wisconsin public radio trip, and unfortunately, we had to go to France, and we had to go to Spain, and we had wonderful Mediterranean diet, which, by the way, is not a low-fat diet. And I'm sitting next to a wonderful guy, and he knows I'm a physician, and with his wife, and he said, you know, my cardiologist would just shame me so much for eating this food. This is the wrong food to eat. And yet we know the Mediterranean diet is the king of diets. It's the right food to eat, and it is not a low-fat diet. So my advice for you is eat the nuts, eat the fish that's really good like salmon, eat the avocados, and take the shame that comes with it.
I'll work on that. I've been able to deal with the guilt so far. I will continue to pursue that.
There you go. There you go. Well, thanks a lot for your call. Thanks for sharing
that
with us.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413.
You know, what's that song? We ought to play that song. That's what we should have to do. Shame, shame, shame. Shame, shame, shame. Da, da, da. Shame, shame, shame. We gotta get that song sometime on the show so we can actually push a button and actually put the song in there. Can we do that, Kyle?
Is that Shame of Fools?
Yes, that's what we want. Shame of Fools that we can put in here. That's right. I'm not a fool, but I think we should do Shame of Fools, because the question is, who's the fool in this story?
1-800-462-7413 is our phone number if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next call, Zorba, forest bathing?
Well, forest bathing is not the same as skinny dipping. So I want to state that very specifically. And in my youth, which was a number of years ago, decades ago, as we'll say, I certainly engaged in skinny dipping at the University of Wisconsin. And let me tell you, the memories are wonderful. But forest bathing is different than skinny dipping. It's going into the forest and communing with nature. And it's something that has been very popular, for instance, in Japan for a number of years. And Japan is a highly urbanized country, but it's also a country that is very interested in the tradition, the ancient tradition of going into the forest. And they're all over the country, people are doing this. And for example, in Los Angeles, they've set up programs where it's an active meditation practice. There is a guide that takes you into the forest. The goal is not to run through the forest. The goal is not to bike through the forest. The goal is to take a 2 to 3 hour walk that goes for 1 mile. The trainer and the guide sit you down. You look at the canopy of trees. You listen to the sounds of the land. And basically, the whole idea is to slow down and relax in Mother Nature. I didn't say it means you have to go to sleep in Mother Nature. But you can be...
Very relaxed.
Now, I don't want to associate this with boredom. It's not boredom. No. The idea is, how do we slow down? And in the middle of an urban environment, it's important. And in the middle of any environment, it's important. And so we think of meditation sitting there, and we have pictures of people in a yoga-type pose with meditation. But we often have trees and woods that are nearest or that we have to go to. And then we take a walk in the woods and, okay, I'm going to take a hike in the woods. I'm going to get mm-hmm. some aerobic exercise. But what about going and trying to go take a spot in the woods and making a circle that you may walk around and just sit and look at the trees and look at the view? It's a fascinating concept of slowing down and getting into your inner self,
but you
called forest bathing.
You didn't really mean to say that to go 1 mile into the forest, you should take 2 hours.
Well, that's what they do. What they do, that is what they do with
forest
bathing.
How slow can you go, David?
Well, they stop. They don't just, they're not just walking slowly and looking at it. They walk slowly, they sit down, they stop. They mm-hmm. listen to the birds.
Yeah.
They smell what's going on. They look out at the canopy of trees. They look at the flowers. In other words, the idea is, how can we do less in more time versus how can we do more yeah. in less time?
That actually and sounds really good.
It really is. It can be very refreshing. Now, I mean, many of us live a very active life. And when we live an active life, the real question is, how do we actually stop, you know, and smell the trees?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, sort of, it's an ancient proverbial thing. But they're actually doing this on a regular basis now in many places of the country. It's something they were doing it in Japan. And I like the concept of forest bathing. It's an interesting word to use, and maybe we can actually kickstart it. You know, it's kind of a pub thing for people who listen to public radio and are interested in nature. You know, and if you're interested in nature, bathing in the forest and the smells and the sounds and in the wind. Yeah. Over time and
sounds
summer and
nice,
winter time,
yeah.
it really sounds like a wonderful thing. Anyway, I wanted to bring that up because I thought a number of our listeners might want to bathe in the forest. And it is different than skinny dipping.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413.
That's a different kind of bathing.
7413.
When you're 19.
Let's welcome our next caller now, a listener in Iola, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. My question is, how are you today, by the way?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for asking.
I have a skin condition. It's called a skin disease, actually. It's called granuloma annulare. I've had it for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And annulare, where is it at? Annulare means round. So just
yeah.
for people around, so they're round areas. How big is it? Where is it at?
They're different sizes. They started between my toes, mm-hmm. near my ankles, mm-hmm. Between my fingers and my wrists. And then it started to spread like up my legs, my inner, you know, where my knees are, the inner part of my knees, my arms. I think it's actually in my scalp.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just progressed to my back, mm-hmm. back of my neck and my neck. It never goes away. And everything I've read that it's supposed to go away after 2 years.
Right, right. What are you on for it? Are you periodically on prednisone?
No, I'm not on anything. The only thing I was doing is I was taking 2 doxycycline,
mm-hmm.
1 doxycycline, 2 rifampin.
Mm-hmm. Does that work, taking those 2 antibiotics?
It doesn't stop it because I do get new ones all the time. And I was tested for cancer, for lymphoma and leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
And my test came back negative.
Right, because it can be associated with
that. Because I had it for such a long time.
How long have you had it for?
I started it 20 years ago.
20 oh. years ago, right.
Yeah, and it worries me because yeah. something that's not...
Sure.
Happening inside of me. I don't know what it is. And
if you had something, because this can be associated with an occult cancer, a cancer beneath the surface, after 20 years it would have declared itself. I mean, you could have anything, but after, you know, usually that declares itself within a year or 2 years, so you don't have that. You've gone to a different dermatologist for this?
Yes, I've been to 3-4 different
right.
side of the state also.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I wish I had an answer for you. I wish that I had something magic to tell you. I can tell you that the worry is something that you should in many ways put to the side because you have 20 years of history now where nothing has shown up. And keep in mind that after 20 years, any of us can get cancer. I mean, that has nothing to do with what we have. In other words, 20 years down the line, I could have cancer. It has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that as we get older, we're more likely to get cancer. So I think the worry is the part we'd like to know what causes things, and then it gives us some comfort. Gee, this was started by this, and that's why we have it. But for some diseases like granuloma annulare and others, we don't have the foggiest idea. We just don't know. We don't know what does it. And I don't know why the antibiotics, doxycycline and rifampin, do anything. I mean, because that implies that there's some chronic infection going on. But antibiotics also have side effects. You know, I mean, some of the side effects of doxycycline are if you go out in the sun, you may get a rash and you may start to itch. So it may be the side effects of these antibiotics that are actually, you know, helping you with this. So the best thing is to be involved with a good dermatologist and keep on doing it. The fact that you've had it for 20 years means it may never go away. And that's the rough part. I mean, 20 years is a long time. Mm-hmm. Anybody else in your family have it?
No, not that I know of. My father's been gone for a long time, mm-hmm. but I think when we were kids, he had something on his leg, and it just stayed locally in one area, and it looked similar from what I can remember.
Yeah, because you may have, I don't know if there's an inherited trait, but maybe it runs in your family with your dad. You have any children yourself?
Yes, I have a daughter. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have it. I have 8 brothers and sisters, and nobody has it.
You're the only one that got it in the family.
I'm the only one that got it, yeah.
8 brothers and sisters. What was that like when you had lunch or dinner?
You know what, Doctor? Everything that I've looked into, like, we don't do any research on it because it doesn't kill you. It's not contagious.
Yeah.
And I actually said to one of the doctors, I said, well, men generally don't get it.
Right.
And I said, the reason they don't do any research is because men don't get it.
Right, that's exactly it. You've got it, that's right. It's a sexist thing. Actually, you bring up a really important point. First of all, if men and women got it and it was all over their face, there would be a lot of research and you would have advocacy. That's exactly what it was. Or if men got it in their groin, you better believe there would be a lot of research on it. So maybe you're right. Maybe this is a whole sexist thing where there isn't research. But in all seriousness, I would go to Facebook and I would look at granulum annulare. I am sure that there is a support group on Facebook for that because Facebook has lots of support groups with orphan, sort of what we call orphan diseases that a lot of people don't have. And you may find out you have a lot in common with other people. And more importantly, you may be able to help other people who have this and deal with this. So that's another positive thing you can do besides trying to say, look, I don't have cancer. It's 20 years later. It's not going to happen. Going to Facebook and joining a support group in Facebook, a virtual support group, which is not virtual. It's a support group. You're just not looking at people face to face, may make a difference. I would try that out. In all seriousness, that would be my advice.
Well, I have to learn how to do that because I don't have a computer.
You don't have a computer?
This no, I go to the library.
This
I
is not not, this is
library.
Not 1996. But you can go to the library and have the and you can go to the library, talk to the reference librarian, tell the reference librarian you want a Facebook support group for what you have, and they will help you because this is what librarians do. This is really what they do.
We have the best librarians you could ever imagine in Iola.
It's wonderful. And librarians are great. They love to share and learn information and help others. There's your vehicle. Thanks. You take care. Thanks for sharing that with us.
We appreciate the call. And don't ever get a computer.
Don't ever get a computer. I got it. That's it.
Before we take a break now, Zorba, let's fire up our newest segment of the show where you, Zorba, a real life and flesh doctor, correct or clarify something a listener has read on the internet. We call it Google Doc. Following email.
I love the music.
The following email came to us from a listener named Susie in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. She writes, Dr. Zorba, I can eat blueberries, but if I eat other fruits with seeds, like kiwi, strawberries, blackberries, bananas, etc., it will cause such joint pain I can't move. Benadryl does not help. And I read someplace online that this is an allergy to a protein in the seed. Have you ever heard of this?
Not at all. I've never heard of that at all. And besides, I can't imagine. First of all, I don't know exactly what's going on, but there's something clearly going on with joint pain. But these are fruits from a whole variety of different places. It's not like they're all citrus fruits or they're all like strawberries and blackberries with those fruits. So I would say no. It's a food intolerance of some sort. But the real question is what else is going on? Because there's something else going on with this person. I would say no. Google did not give you the answer. answer in this case. A lot of times Google is right, but in this case, Google was wrong.
Did you read something online that you're not quite sure about? Our real-life doc is here to clarify the clickbait. Just post on our Facebook page. See, I'm computer...
I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, I'm computer literate.
Unbelievable. You are coming into the 21st century.
Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at...
Email? What's email? Send us a letter at 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53716. And don't forget to enclose that self-addressed envelope or go to zorba@wpr.org.
Our recipe coming up along with more of your
recipe.
Calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, squash curry with red lentils.
I can just tell from the way you announced that how much you love this recipe.
You can see how excited I was.
You are excited. Yeah. You looked at this recipe today and you said, I can't wait to hear it, right? Can't wait to hear it. Was it the squash curry or was it the red lentils or was it the color?
No, you actually saw was my not being able to wait until this was over.
Well, I've been like squash. Now, there are interesting things about lentils. Lentils are a bean, and they're a wonderful bean. They're high protein. They're very inexpensive. We don't eat a lot of lentils on this Indian subcontinent and all around Asia. Lentils are very common to eat because they're cheap, they're inexpensive, they're high in protein. Mm-hmm. And there was a recent study that we discussed here that showed when you mix lentils, for instance, with potatoes, that you reduce the glycemic index, which glycemic index is how fast the carbohydrate is metabolized into your body, and thereby may reduce the risk of diabetes. And so the same thing will occur with squash, because squash has a high glycemic index. Mix it with lentils, which are high fiber, and all of a sudden you will have a better, healthier meal. Mm. And so if you like squash, my wife loves squash, and she loves squash curry. Mixing it with lentils really is a very appealing thing to do and will improve the nutrition of that. So 2 tablespoonfuls of canola oil. You could use olive oil with this too.
2 big tea canola oil.
1½ cup of a diced onion, any onion you have. What kind of onions do you buy at the store, Tom? We'll just leave that into the abeyance. 1½ cups of diced onion.
1½ cups diced onion.
Now, you're going to dice some garlic, and if you like garlic, dice a bunch of it. And when I make a recipe, often if it says a clove of garlic, to me, 1 clove means 6, because we love garlic.
Oh,
so I never dice or put through a garlic press 1 clove. So bunch of garlic, minced garlic.
Okay.
Bunch of minced garlic. 1 tablespoonful of minced fresh ginger. 2 teaspoons of curry powder.
2 little tea curry powder.
Now, curry powder, there are lots of different curry powders. If you like hot curry powder, like my wife Penny does, use hot curry powder. If you like mild, mild curry powder. I love going to Penzi's Spices in Madison. They have wonderful spices, mail order. They have a variety of curry powders. Their curry powders are awesome. So you've got to pick a good curry powder and make it fresh by a small amount and keep on buying it because it does get stale after a while. Now, you need 20 ounces of cubed butternut squash. Now, you can buy this in a package, in a frozen package or fresh 20-ounce package, cubed and peeled butternut squash. Or you can take butternut squash, go to the instructions on the internet, cook it, peel it, and cube it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep. What else?
One cup of red lentils.
A cup red lentils.
A cup of chopped tomatoes. You can either get fresh tomatoes if they are in season or canned tomatoes. And if they're not in season, go to the canned tomatoes. Better. My mother used to say, better a canned tomato than a bad fresh tomato.
Mm-hmm. A cup chopped fresh tomatoes.
Actually, my mother never said that, but I like to say that she did. I like to say that she did, but she never said that. A teaspoon and a half of salt.
Are you going to go into some kind of rigmarole about salt?
No, I'm not going to go into rigmarole about salt. I could. Sea salt, Tibetan salt. I could. 14. What do you think? I'm just trying to.
No, that's very informative.
4 cups of water. Okay, I'm going to go into the. What kind of water should we use? Water, water. Wet. Use the water that's wet.
4 cups of water.
A 14-ounce can of coconut milk.
A 14-ounce can of coconut milk.
Pick your favorite can. What kind of coconut milk do you like? I got to get through this recipe. 5 lime wedges.
5 lime wedges.
And if you like cilantro, you're going to use cilantro.
Okay.
Remember, there are people who like it. Do you like, by the way, do you like cilantro or not?
Have any idea whether I like cilantro or not.
I mean, some people like it. It's a leaf with a distinct taste to it. And if people don't like it, I put in parsley. And I ask when I cook for people. Mm-hmm. Okay. Heat the oil in a large pot over medium heat. Add the onion, garlic, ginger, and curry powder. And then cook, stirring often until the onion is starting to soften, about 2 to 3 minutes. Then add squash, lentils, tomato, and salt, stirring for about a minute. Add the water, bring it to a boil over low heat, and simmer it, just stirring it occasionally until the squash is nice and tender. The lentils are mostly broken down, and that's about 20 minutes or so. Then stir in the coconut milk, simmer until it's heated through about 1 minute, and serve with lime wedges on the side. And if you want to, cilantro on the side too. Mm-hmm. And or parsley, because people will like that. And it's wonderful. It's squash curry. It's got, once again, lentils, which will lower the glycemic index. It's about 350 calories, which is good. Believe it or not, it really has quite a lot of protein. It has 15% of the protein you need in basically a cup of this. So, I mean, it's got 15% of the protein, and that is not coming from the squash. That's coming from the lentils. Mm-hmm. High protein dish. And I'm sure that most of you have not written this down, and I love to give the website because Tom knows it's my favorite thing to do on the show, ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And remember, you can find us on Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our number if you have a question for Zorba. And we go back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Cyclone, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have this lump growing on the back of my hand. Hmm. I've had one doctor take a look at it. He said it was a ganglion cyst, took x-rays, make sure there wasn't any calcium or a fracture or anything in there. Mm-hmm. And it's right between the middle and ring fingers.
Okay.
And it's about the size now of the top half of a golf ball.
Oh, that's pretty big.
Yeah, it's been growing for a year. It started about a year ago with a little bitty lump there and keeps getting bigger and bigger. And. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I asked him if I should have somebody slam it with a dictionary, you know.
By the way, that was the old treatment. I had an old doctor's book from the 1890s, and the treatment was take the family Bible and take the – and it was actually instructions how to take the family Bible with the corner and smash the ganglion. I mean, it was a treatment. Cool. Of course, the second treatment on the next page was how to deal with the fracture of the hand if you smash it too hard. I mean, it really was an old book. I don't know if it was real or not. But anyway, so yes, your doc, what did your doc say?
Well, he wanted to run more tests and stuff on it. He thought maybe shooting it with
steroid?
Yeah, cortisone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He thought maybe shooting it with cortisone would help. But then I got out my PDR and looked up the side effects of cortisone, and I wasn't happy with that.
Now, wait a second. You've got
your adrenal gland.
But you've got a PDR, physician's desk reference?
Yes. Yeah, I've had one for years.
I know. I mean, those are not as common anymore. What'd you do for a living?
Well, I have a Bachelor of Science degree in engineering. I do consulting engineering for underground houses and homes and things like that.
Hey, good for you. You did your research. You got out the research and saw that the steroids do have side effects. The answer is they do have side effects, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So my question is, what else can be done about this thing besides surgery?
Because okay, so first of all,
he said it may have to remove it by surgery.
Right, so surgery, this is coming from the joint, and it's a kind of a rent in the joint where there's a bubble that's coming up, sort of almost like an aneurysm, like a bubble in a hose. And so it is coming from the joint. And quite often, if you poke it, with you freeze the top and you poke it with a needle, joint fluid comes out that's quite sticky. I mean, it's kind of interesting. It almost seems like lubricating fluid, which, of course, actually it is lubricating fluid. It's a very tacky, sticky thing. And sometimes just a spot of steroid will get it to settle down. That works, I don't know what percentage of the time, nowhere near 100%. So first of all, just poking it and take the liquid out, sometimes that actually works, number one. Number two, a little bit of steroid is not likely to disturb the joint one time. In other words, putting in some Depo-Medrol, we call it 5 or 10 milligrams of Depo-Medrol, probably, and there's a probably here, there's always a risk with the steroid, not going to do too much for the joint. And sometimes that just gets the joint fluid not for, you know to keep it from reforming. Because poking it, it may reform. And that basically is the treating it. But sometimes the poking it just does it in and of itself. So you could go back to your doc and say, you know, I wouldn't smash it with a book because you may injure yourself.
Right.
And I personally would not smash it. I'd have your doctor do it because you don't want to get you want a sterile needle to go inside the joint. But you might tell your doc, look, why don't you poke it, take out the fluid, and let's see if that works, not do the steroid. And if it reforms, then you make a decision, hey, it bothers me, I'm going to try the steroid or I'm going to go for the surgery. But you might just poke it first.
Okay.
Any trauma to that hand, previous trauma, major trauma? I mean, we hit our hands all the time.
Well, I'm right-handed, plus I used to box in my squadron in the Air Force, and I was in karate and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I was a boxer for my squadron. So,
what was that like?
Well, I got hit a lot.
I have a question.
Never got knocked out, though.
Didn't that bother you, getting hit? I mean, it's painful to get hit. Didn't it bother
you? Well, I was in the military after unarmed combat training in basic, you know, getting hit with we used to call them marshmallows because they were 16-ounce slugs instead of the regular 8-ounce that professionals use. Mm-hmm. So, but even then, you know, you get hit pretty hard. I did get knocked on my knees one time, but I didn't pass out, so I was able to get back up.
So you can tolerate pain.
Yeah, I don't ever get anesthetic when they drill my teeth, when I have to have fillings and stuff done.
Huh. It's my theory that actually there are people who don't tolerate pain. It's just different in the brain. You know, it's a different brain function. But you boxed and did karate and other things. Well, this might be a little bit from the trauma of that, from the trauma to that joint, from that previous trauma. But once again, if it bothers you, I definitely would get it treated. And maybe you could just take up boxing again and have somebody box your hand. That would be very dangerous.
Yeah, take a bare knuckle boxing, maybe that'll pop it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Okay, well, thanks for the information. I'll get the doctor to stick a needle in that, see if he can drain it.
Right, that's what I would do. Just drain it.
Okay,
take care.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
I have never in my life even thought of boxing. Never, never, never. That is far away from my brain as anything else. Have you ever seen a boxing match in person? Not
no,
on TV.
No,
I've never seen a boxing match. Have you ever seen a boxing match in person?
No, just in middle school.
Just in middle school. I mean, you mean on the playground when two kids were fighting? Or?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, how long did that last?
Usually about 5-10 seconds.
5-10? But can you imagine boxing and boxing? I can't imagine. Can't imagine.
Well, I can imagine.
Well, it's a phrase. I can't imagine. I can't imagine. That's right.
800-462-7413.
You're taking me literally again.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. Before the break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite nitpickers and backseat drivers.
Oh, no, not again.
The Grammar Police.
Oh, no. It's the Grammar Police. Miss Schutte, I got to tell you, Miss Schutte, my eighth grade teacher, who I really disliked a lot, would be so happy that there's a segment here because she always was correcting my grammar, you know. And I always had words for her that were not grammatically – well, they were grammatically correct, but they were not something I could say on NPR.
Okay. Actually, Zorba, this one is from the Pork Police. A listener named Cristobal sent us the following email. Dear Dr. Zorba, prosciutto is not Spanish. the Spanish would cover their nose at the thought. Prosciutto is from Italy, not from Spain.
Right.
Jamón Serrano and prosciutto are both cold, cured, aged hams, yes. However, the Jamón Serrano is made out of legs of Iberic pigs that are exclusively fed acorns. The drying process
acorns.
Is highly controlled and longer, oftentimes twice as long as the drying process used for prosciutto. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. That's yeah. it. Well, I have been in Madrid to the Museum of Ham and had some of the best ham. Serrano, whatever it's called, and that I've ever had. And they do. They have a leg in there. I don't know if you've been in Madrid. Have you been in Madrid?
No.
They have the leg in the window, and you order the ham, and they slice it off the leg. And the leg is right there in the window, sitting up there. But I didn't realize that. And you know what? That's important. So it's thank you. Really, thank you so much. But it's not grammar. I just got the pork. I got the name of this thing wrong. This is a whole other subject. This is another kind of police.
We
maybe it's the
we don't
food
have a
police.
Song for the city is wrong.
I know. So you got it.
Oh, no. The city is wrong. By the way.
That's pretty good.
By the way.
I don't think you make money on it,
the heck,
I like the
what the heck is Iberic pigs.
Iberic pigs. Well, that's, you know something? Somebody will write us about that. I have no doubt about that. Because I'm not giving the answer. Because I'm not on the net and I don't know the answer.
Do you feel like squealing on Zorba?
Oink, oink.
Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls coming up, of course. Another topic to talk about. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. The Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, being single will kill you faster than obesity?
Well, it's really interesting. What's interesting about this is actually the title that was in The Sun, which is a newspaper, that being single will kill you faster than obesity. But it's actually a study about loneliness, which is completely different. Because you can be single or you can be married and you can still be lonely. And it's a very interesting thing.
Yeah.
But they were looking at loneliness as a risk factor for sudden death. And some, most of the sudden death is cardiovascular death, stroke, or a heart attack, you know, one of the two. And they were looking at, it was an English study that looked at people. It was one of the longitudinal studies that we talk about all the time. And one of the things you're asked is, are you lonely? And it's a scale for like 1 to 5, you know, 5 being I'm most lonely, you know, 3 being neutral, 1 is I'm never lonely at all. And lo and behold, and then they look at other things. They look at diet and exercise, the pills you're taking and so on. And lo and behold, it turns out that loneliness is a major risk factor for sudden death. And it also turns out that there are many people who are lonely, and their friends, the people who are their friends, who they know around their circle, don't know that they're lonely. In other words, some people are lonely, and they don't let the people around know that they're lonely, that they have social needs. And it's kind of an interesting concept.
If you're lonely, that means you don't have friends.
Well, or you don't have friends that you relate to and talk to. So you might have people around you, but you don't have people around you that we think of loneliness as nobody to talk to. But it's a major risk factor, and it's the interaction. Now, what I find fascinating is a recent study that showed in The Lancet that showed that people with hearing loss, that maybe 10% of all dementia is caused by unamplified hearing loss.
Yeah.
Well, when you have a hearing loss, you don't engage in conversation with other people, and you become lonely. And so loneliness may also lead to dementia. It's a very interesting marker. And as people get older, they tend to get lonelier. When you're younger, you tend to form friends easily around common things that you're doing, quote, doing. When you're older, you're not doing as much. You're not working. You're not with people, thrown into people with stuff that you're doing. And once again, it then becomes a risk factor that we don't address in medicine. I mean, I don't have people come in and I don't say in a Medicare physical, are you lonely? I've never said that. You know, I may say, how are things going? Oh, fine. What does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a greeting. So I think the study shows loneliness is a risk factor for sudden death, and it's usually from cardiovascular disease. And it's an important thing to think about because as you get older, it means that being with your friends and family counts. But also, if you don't have friends and family to be with, going and doing volunteer things or joining groups or going to a church group may do more to strengthen your life than even anything else you do.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, here's a listener in Spokane, Washington with us. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thanks for taking my question. I love your program. My question was about the nutritious value of food after it's reheated. I live by myself. I cook probably 90% of my meals.
Good for you.
I do shopping at the farmer's market during the summer, you know, good food. And I just I don't like to cook the whole meal every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll make, say, a chicken curry that I can use for three or four meals and then just maybe add a fresh vegetable at each meal. And I just got to wondering recently about how nutritious is that chicken curry when I eat it 4 days later.
Sure.
I don't reheat the whole thing every time. I just take out what I need and put it into a bowl, then reheat it in the microwave using paper towels for the cover and not plastic wrap. But just what should I be cooking more often, or is am I not losing too much of the nutrition in that food by reheating it?
Well, first of all, you're making your own food. Congratulations. I mean, that's really the important thing. But because if you get pre-made meals and you look at the number of ingredients on the back, you know, it's mind-boggling what goes into a frozen, what I would call a TV dinner, but I don't know, you know, we don't, I don't know what they're called these days, but TV dinners are what they are. You know, and there are, you know, anywhere between 25 and 500 ingredients, it looks, always looks. I mean, the label is often, you know, it often is, you know, it's in, you know, it's an 8-point type, and it often takes off half the back. And that's the reason is when they're industrialized food, they manufacture it and put a lot of stuff in it that you do not need.
Right.
And we don't know what that means, but we know that all that extra stuff is not nutritious. That much we know. Whether it's bad for us, we don't know, but we know it's not good for us.
Right.
So cooking your own food is great. And cooking for one, it's really important. You don't want to cook for one every single day. So
right.
The real question is, what about reheating? And the answer is, when you reheat things, you do lose a little, but you don't lose a lot.
Okay.
And so the way you're doing it is right. You make the meal, then you put it in the refrigerator so it stays stable, and then you take out part of it and you heat it up to the point where you can eat it. You're not going to lose that much nutrition, not at all. And it's really the vitamins. Some of the vitamins are more some of the vitamins lose more with heat than others. But by adding a fresh vegetable, what you're doing is you're really adding the vitamins that you may have lost when you're reheating the cooking that you're doing initially with the curry. So as the perfect example. So adding something to it actually is adding nutritious. So you're probably nutrition neutral to the first meal because you're adding something fresh to the second meal.
Right, right.
And the more colorful the meal, at least initially, plentiful fruits and vegetables, color and nutrition go hand in hand.
Oh,
so colorful meals are actually better for you. The beige American diet is bad for you. You know, you know.
No, I've got lots of color in my food.
So that's it. You're doing a good job. So what sort of stuff do you like to cook?
Well,
curry is great.
Lots of curries, I will sometimes just do chicken baked with a little bit of seasoning and then add lots of veggies to it. I eat a lot of rice, both brown and white. I think some things just taste better with white rice and brown.
But this is really, this is the right way to think about cooking and going to the farmer's market, making food part of your life and integrating it into your life. And a lot of people look at it as, oh, God, I have to make dinner. So it's not part of their life. It's like something that's a chore. I mean, if you have to feed 12 people at home and you have to do it every single day on the farm, that's a chore because it's 12 people. But for yourself, it should be a joy.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do it every night. You want to do it. You want to make good stuff. And then the other nights, because doing it every single night is more work.
It becomes a chore.
It becomes a chore. So you've really mastered things. So adding the fresh veggie does it.
And I'm a good cook, too. So I really enjoy having good food around, and some of it even tastes better the second day. So.
Oh, it does. There's no doubt that soups and other things, beans, often taste better. There are many things that taste much better the next day because I'm not sure exactly why, but the tastes come together. Certainly, soups to me always taste better the next day. There's no doubt about it. And on a special meals, I will make a brisket. I love making a brisket, and I use about 3 different recipes. And I add a bunch of tomatoes. I add apricots. I add craisins, which are dried cranberries. I add white raisins. And I had to do this. We were having a Passover dinner. And I knew I wouldn't have time to do it the day before based on it. So I made it 3 days before and I sliced it so everything would get in the middle of the brisket. And then every single day I tasted it because I had it in the refrigerator and it got better and better and better. So after 3 days, the meat became, it just was fork tender and everything came in and it turned out to be the best brisket. So now I make this brisket 3 days in advance because it tastes much better than making it that day.
That's right. That's right. Sounds good.
Yeah. Well, keep cooking. I love cooking,
Thank
too.
You. Thank I you. Too, I appreciate so. Your information.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for that call. At 800-462-7413. Oh, you like cooking.
Yeah, I like cooking. That's right. What a shock. Shockaroo. Well, I bet all the listeners are really shocked to know that I like cooking and I like food. I bet they're really shocked that I'm not a Twinkie person.
Now, Zorba, we love it when our listeners get social with us on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. So it's time for another round of Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
Okay, first, Lois in Wisconsin writes, Zorba, can you please share any ideas you have on how to cure tinnitus?
Well, first of all, tinnitus, which is ringing in the ears, there is no cure for it. That's number one. Having something in the background for sound, I have tinnitus, makes a difference. So in my house, I always have something in the background, even if I'm not listening to it, because I found the tinnitus bothers me. The other thing is cognitive behavioral therapy. So when you have ringing in the ears, like right now when I'm talking about it, I find the ringing, it gets louder. And when I stop talking about it and I don't think about it, the ringing gets softer. So it's how the brain attends to it. So there are people who engage in cognitive behavioral therapy that help people with tinnitus get their brain to the other side of the ringing so the ringing doesn't bother them. And there are things to do. And undoubtedly, there are examples on the website, but there are CBT therapists that actually work with this. Unfortunately, at this point, no cure.
Next, Robin in Texas writes, Zorba, I went to a diet doctor who says to eat absolutely zero sodium, not just added sodium, but also something like a natural sodium in it. She says this is a proven part of her weight loss program. I understand that if people eat processed foods, they can do just fine without adding any salt at all, but I just can't believe that naturally occurring sodium is harmful. Your thoughts?
Well, you're right. You can't believe it because it's not true. We need a certain amount of sodium. We'd actually need a certain amount of sodium in our body to do all of its work. Sodium is really important. So the idea of a sodium-free diet is bogus. There's absolutely wrong. Now, the idea of having less salt or no salt, we know that's okay. We know that there's enough sodium in food that we actually don't need to have salt. We like salt. And we know Americans eat too much salt. But the idea that you should get rid of all sodium in your food is hype and bogus.
And finally, Zorba, Nan in Springfield, Missouri writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. I heard part of the show today about pharmacists offering a less expensive option for some scripts or doctor-ordered items. In good old Missouri, there is a gag order that prevents pharmacists from doing just that."
Oh, wow.
Stupidity reigns, I guess.
A gag order.
Can you believe
it? I wonder who put that gag order in.
I wonder what lobby.
Do you think there could be a profit motive involved here? Why don't consumers know about this so they can be enraged about it? Yeah. A gag order. Who paid the money for that stupid law?
And let's keep the Facebook love coming. You can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And before we head out today, Zorba, time again now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc.
The following email came to us from Dan, who listens on WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee. He writes, "Dr. Zorba, you were recently talking about protecting yourself from tick-borne disease, and you mentioned wearing long-sleeve shirts. In my practice, I see a lot of tick-borne disease. I was attending a lecture, and the speaker said that ticks like to burrow under clothing and hair. It was interesting that he quoted a study carried out in Connecticut in a nudist colony."
Connecticut in a nudist colony. I'm trying to picture this. A nudist colony in the woods where there are ticks. I've got the image. It's in my mind.
Several individuals.
You know, in America, we have all sorts of,
absolutely,
sorts of things.
Right. Several individuals participated, and I think only one case of Lyme disease was detected in the group. So maybe we should all go naked when we are outside during the tick season.
That's right. And you know, part of that is looking at each other's bodies and removing anything that's on there that's unsightly. That's it. I've got the whole image. You know what? I think, just like we talked about, you know, at the beginning of the show, we talked about forest bathing. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should do forest bathing in the nude and start a whole movement.
You think that's a lot funnier than I think it is. Do you disagree with the good doc? Do you disagree with a good doc? Give him a dose of the naked truth by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom. Stay clothed also.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org and, of course, through Facebook. And don't send us any ticks, please. We don't need any more. We've got plenty here.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413.
Connecticut Nudist Colony.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I wonder if they were in Lyme, Connecticut, when they did the study.
It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc.
Then we'll get rid of Lyme disease.
Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark with clothes on, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.